Hi, and welcome to the AA Grapevine. I'm your volunteer reader, Shelley Miller. Today I'll be reading from the November 2024 issue of the AA Grapevine. This is part three. Some of the articles we'll be covering in this episode is joy in sobriety, emotional sobriety, and gratitude. Let's get started. And this story is titled, Python-Sized. Too anxious to attend AA, he finally found his home in a small meeting room. I began drinking alcohol at the age of 16. The effects of my first drinking experience were surprisingly and very pleasant. But my first hangover was equally surprising, and it was the beginning of many hangovers to come in my life. I was a binge drinker. My pattern was to drink alcohol to the point of oblivion or until the money or alcohol ran out. Over the course of 27 years of drinking, my tolerance for alcohol increased and blackouts were a common occurrence. Nobody that I know of in my family has ever had an issue with alcoholism. My father was not an alcoholic, nor was my mother. Therefore, I did not have any parental or family example that influenced me to drink. Whether a genetic predisposition to alcoholism due to my Irish and Cherokee blood is a factor or not, I do not know. I suffered many troubles in my life due to my excessive use of alcohol, hangovers, embarrassment, blackouts, arrest for driving under the influence, loss of employment, etc. I also caused my family and friends much grief and ruined my marriage. I have certainly heard similar or worse stories than my own. I do not want to focus on my alcoholic history too much, but rather on my recovery from alcoholism. However, there is one subject I do want to share about in detail. I also suffer from social anxiety disorder. I entered the rooms of AA in 2003 when I became a beneficiary in a rehabilitation program. I completed the six-month program but soon relapsed into drinking. My relapses kept occurring until 2008 when I had my last drink. Many alcoholics relapse several times and then finally attain sobriety. Why did I have such a hard time in my recovery for 5 years? I believe that my biggest stumbling block has been social anxiety. I have been extremely uncomfortable in groups of people since my childhood. School was very difficult for me, but not due to any lack of intelligence or learning problems. My family moved quite often when I was a kid, and as a result, I attended 10 different schools. I was always the new kid and had very few friends. I developed an esteem shyness and low self-esteem that continued into my adult years. Fear of public speaking was and is a problem as well. I was so afraid and nervous about having to make a speech in classrooms that I would ditch school on the day of my scheduled talk and gladly accept an F grade. In the beginning, AA meetings were hard for me to attend. I had no problems with what was being discussed. For the most part, I had no personal dislike of anyone in the groups. I was simply so uncomfortable to the point that I eventually decided not to attend AA meetings anymore. Of course, I would end up drinking and suffering, re-entering AA, and repeating the process over and over. What finally broke this cycle and kept me in steady attendance at AA meetings was joining a small AA group in an isolated community I moved to. The nearest sizable town was 50 miles away. The members of this small AA group warmly welcomed me. They reached out and supported me rather than me having to reach out to them. My fear slowly began to melt away and I came out of my shell. The paralysis of thought and speech that I suffered in groups was lifted. I was able to connect with people and join the human race. My problem during my years of relapsing was that I had no AA fellowship. How can you receive support from a group of recovering alcoholics if you do not ever make friends or share in meetings? How could I ever expect to recover from drinking if I stayed out of AA meetings? My life has vastly improved as a result of the program of Alcoholics Anonymous. I credit God most of all. Having a good sponsor and practicing the 12 steps have been of paramount importance as well. Yet I must say that finally having the fellowship that I needed with other recovering alcoholics in AA has proved pivotal in my success. Life is not perfect for me today, but it is so much better than it has ever been. Fears, resentments, anger, and a host of other character defects have been alleviated. I have more friends now than I ever had in my life. I enjoy AA meetings and look forward to attending them. I still get a little nervous when I share, but I do share, and I volunteered as a 15-minute speaker several times, which is something I thought I would never be able to do. My new ease and abilities are a gift from God and the transformational power of AA. Our program is not intended to simply keep me from drinking alcohol. Our goal is to have a spiritual experience, learn to love and enjoy life, and change our behavior and thinking. God and AA are the solution for my drinking and all of my other problems, including social anxiety. Because of AA, I am able to daily arrest my alcoholism, and I'm less of the anxious alcoholic than I used to be. Signed, Anthony W. in Carson City, Nevada. And now from the What's on Your Mind section, a story entitled Our Drinking Story. A member shares his thoughts about the importance of AA's singleness of purpose. Some years ago, I sponsored a newcomer who shared with me at length his dry goods story. At some point, I asked him, Richard, did you ever take a drink? His demeanor quickly changed. Incensed, he dropped me as his sponsor on the spot. I so identified with Richard. In the last few years of my drinking, I would grow enraged if I felt that anyone was seeking to come between me and the bottle. I deserved to drink. You would drink too if you had my miserable life. No one was going to take away the good one thing left to me. Or if they suggested I might, God forbid, have a drinking problem. I would be overcome with shame to the point that I could barely speak. What, after all, could be lower than an alcoholic? The stereotype was fixed in my mind of the drunk as one of those unfortunate homeless sots wandering New York's Bowery and sleeping on the street. I may have been on the Bowery, too, back in the day when it was still Skid Row, but it was a second-story Bowery, a loft where I lived with my artist wife. Drugs became part of my life, coming of age in the 60s. By day, I would take speed to ease my sense of intellectual inferiority, and by nightfall, I'd turn to significant quantities of beer to ease the crash. This pattern began in college and continued into my late 20s and resulted in a psychotic break. Lurid images of violence kept entering my mind, leaving me terrified. A consultation was arranged with a therapist with whom I was honest about my drugging and drinking. Give me the pills, he said, and I did, having brought them with me. And then he put me on antipsychotic medication and said we would see what happened with my drinking when I was stable enough to hold a job. If the doctor had told me to swear off the bottle, that would not have been possible. The booze I could let go of, but not the booze. Over any considerable period, we get worse, never better, our big book says about alcoholism. And this was certainly the case with me those last few years. Auditory hallucinations, blackouts, falling down drunk on the street. I couldn't shower without first taking a drink. In any 24-hour period, a craving for alcohol would overcome me. I first came to AA in 1977 and stayed long enough for a few cups of coffee. I simply had more drinking to do. My sobriety date is February 16, 1980. Hearing members of the fellowship share their drinking stories enabled me to get in touch with my own. A major facet of alcoholism is denial, which is why we have our meetings in community centers and church basements and not Yankee Stadium. As we say, it's an illness that tells me I don't have an illness. For this reason, hearing others share their experience, strength, and hope, including their drinking story, is essential. Identification is key in helping those who are new to recovery come out of their denial, and that identification starts with the drinking story. My home group is on the Upper West Side of Manhattan. A number of speakers there have recently shared largely about dry goods. The term using often replaces drinking. I have noticed the same trend at some other meetings here in Manhattan, and so a group inventory was scheduled and facilitated by our area's alternate delegate. Each member was given 2 minutes to share. I proposed, among other things, the following, that we focus mainly on alcohol and alcoholism when we lead a meeting, and if we feel a burning need to share extensively or exclusively about other substances, we summon the courage to take that burning need to other fellowships. For example, there is, preceding this meeting, a wonderful Narcotics Anonymous meeting. I'm not a member of AA if I have a desire to stop drinking according to Tradition 3. And with that right comes the responsibility to maintain the unity of the AA program by practicing singleness of purpose. One AA member commented that Bill W.'s AA is a thing of the past. We are creating a new AA, appropriate to our times, he said, and that means sharing about drugs as much as we need to. This sentiment seemed to be supported by several others who shared. Essentially, they were offering no assurance that our closed discussion steps and traditions meeting would focus mainly on alcohol and alcoholism. I left the group inventory feeling that the AA I know and cherish no longer exists, at least at my home group. Just the other week, I sat at a table waiting for a takeout order at a pizza place. The young man sitting next to me at some point got up to claim his order. I turned and was staring to see, within a foot of my elbow, his bottle of unfinished beer. Powerfully, the smell of beer and the taste of different beers came back to me. As I moved away, I remembered the closing paragraph of Chapter 3, more about alcoholism in our big book. Once more, the alcoholic at certain times has no effective mental defense against the first drink. Except in a few rare cases, neither he nor any other human being can provide such a defense. His defense must come from a higher power. Cunning, baffling, powerful. So Bill writes of alcohol in the chapter How It Works. Elsewhere, he refers to it as a subtle foe. And patient, very patient, I believe it's safe to add. By the way, the same former sponsee Richard, a very sober and changed and happy Richard, came to me some years later and thanked me for prodding him to get in touch with his drinking story. And why not? It can be, for some, challenging enough to stay in AA with a drinking story, and a lot harder, if not impossible, to stay here without one. Signed, David S. in New York, New York. And now from the Fun and Sobriety Department. Joy on a Full Moon. A sober bike ride with his home group in Glacier National Park was just the adventure he was looking for. One of the many blessings of recovery is that I now go on many of the adventures I used to only talk about while drinking at the bar. Glacier National Park is a short 45 minutes from the town where I live. Riding my bicycle up Going to the Sun Road during a full moon was one of the adventures I had always dreamed about. After I got sober and worked the steps with my sponsor, I began to get my life back and decided to go on this biking adventure. I started taking short local rides before AA meetings to get myself in shape and familiarize myself with my bicycle. I told members in my home group about my idea, and some of them were interested in participating in the ride. We started meeting weekly for a 90-minute no-drop ride around town and the surrounding countryside. On a no-drop ride, everyone works together to make sure even the slowest rider is supported on the ride. I was amazed at what I learned from other members while riding together. Some had grown up in this town and some had great stories to tell. Everyone had spent time on a bicycle and we each shared the adventures of our first rides with one another. We finally picked a date for a full moon. We made arrangements for carpooling and set out on our ride. 8 people showed up. We also had 3 people show up who didn't want to ride, but were willing to drive a sag wagon behind us to pick up stragglers. Our adventure began at the loop on Going to the Sun Road to Logan Pass at 7 in the evening, just in time to be awed by the alpen glow of a setting sun on the garden wall. The 8-mile ride took about 2 hours, and it was like a rolling AA meeting. Some of the more experienced riders were faster and did their visiting after they reached the pass. Other of us happily chatted as we pedaled our way to the top. Along the way, we got words of encouragement from the drivers of the sag wagons. At the top of the pass, we were treated to a spectacular moonrise over Mount Heavy Runner just as the sun set behind the Livingston Range. The drivers of the sag wagons met us for the path for warm clothes, lights for the ride down, coffee, cocoa, and other treats, while we had an impromptu gratitude meeting in the parking lot. At around 10 in the evening, we strapped on our bike lights and coasted down the loop in the glow of the full moon. What had taken us 2 hours to ride up took only 20 minutes to ride down. What a joy! I began to understand fully what it means fully what the fellowship of AA means. Since the first ride of a dozen years ago, our full moon ride going up the Sun Road has become an annual event. We've had as few as 2 riders and as many as 15. We've even had visiting tourists ride up with us. Many non-bike riders drive the sag wagons and experience the beauty of the park and the camaraderie of the fellowship. I get to learn so much about sobriety and life from my fellow riders. This past year, I experienced some of the road bumps that occur at our journey through life. After 36 years of marriage, my wife wanted a divorce, and I became consumed with trying to get my life back on track. I decided to blow off the annual bike ride to focus on what I thought I needed to be done. I was overwhelmed with inquiries about when and where we were going to do the ride, and I said I was too busy and I couldn't do it. Another member of our group knew the importance of the event to our members and picked up the mantle of organizer. The ride was set. I still didn't plan on participating, but at the last minute, everything came together and I was able to join them. It turned out to be the best ride ever, although I say that every year. That ride turned out to be loaded with poignant lessons for me. I felt such a rush getting to the starting point, even though I worried that I wasn't good enough condition to accomplish the ride. I rode in the back of the group and got to visit with some of the riders I didn't see very often. I rode slower than usual, and it was cool that evening, so about 5 miles up, I stopped to put on my windbreaker. As I looked around before getting back on my bicycle, I noticed my car keys on the ground between my shoes. In the process of pulling out my jacket out of my jersey pocket, I had unknowingly dropped my keys. I started to berate myself. I've always been harder on myself than anyone else ever could be. My next thought was, wait. Stop that. Give thanks that you noticed them at dusk rather than look for them when you got back to your car when it would be dark and you would have no idea where you had lost them. I immediately realized how fortunate I had been in finding the keys and gave thanks for that. A little further on, I was resting along the side of the road when several elite riders came by. They stopped and we enjoyed the gloaming of the evening, stretching out along Lake McDonald far below. As we chatted about our experiences on this road, they asked if I had any other warm clothes, and I said yes. I had some arm warmers. They were surprised I had nothing for my legs, but I assured them I would be fine. They rode on, and after waiting for the final 2 riders in our group, I continued up the road as well. As I pedaled around Oberlin Bend before the final stretch of the pass, most of our group went zipping down the road in the opposite direction. They had gotten cold and decided it was time to descend. When I got to the top, I had the whole place to myself, not another vehicle or rider in sight. It was cold, so I went through my pockets to pull out my warmer clothes. The first thing I pulled out was a single leg warmer. It turned out that was the only warm article of clothing I had on me. The other clothes I brought were carried by the other riders in our group who had already gone on down the road. I was at least able to give thanks for what I had rather than beat myself up. Because of the cold and lack of warm clothes, I decided I better leave. I would check with the final 2 riders on the way down. I strapped on my bike light and headed down the winding road. I made it about 100 yards before the light blinked off. I pulled over to the side of the road in the glow of the moon and tried to troubleshoot the light. There was no fixing it, and my extra light was with the riders who had already descended. I thought, no problem. There was a full moon, and I felt it had enough light to make the remaining miles down to the cars. I didn't consider the moon shadow created by the cliffs along the road, and when I rode into the shadows, the world turned pitch black. I made it about 50 feet in the darkness before I realized this was really dangerous. As I looked down the road stretching before me, I saw the dim blinking lights from our final 2 riders. I waited for them, and when they made their way up to me, I asked for help. I asked them if they had an extra light. They had an extra pen light, so I turned around and followed them back to the top of the pass. The final ride down was not what I expected. It was colder, the ride was slower, and with dimmer light than I was riding by myself. I was able to use that time to be grateful for 3 lessons I had been given that day. Don't beat yourself up. Give thanks for what you have, and it is okay to ask for help. Thank you, God. Signed, Paul L. in Whitefish, Montana. This story is from the emotional sobriety section, and it's entitled The Art of Listening. Thanks to a good sponsor, he stayed and kept an open mind. It was now his turn to give back. I'm having a good time being sober. It wasn't always like that. In early sobriety, I read a passage in the story Dr. Paul wrote in the back of our big book, but I didn't understand it until I went through an emotional ringer first. He wrote, "Until I could accept my alcoholism, I could not stay sober. Unless I accept life completely on life's terms, I cannot be happy. I need to concentrate not so much on what needs to be changed in the world as what needs to be changed in me and my attitudes." That's the answer, acceptance. About 3 years later, I attended a Steps and Traditions AA meeting at a halfway house in Los Angeles. I felt weird about that first meeting there, but didn't know why. The secretary was a nice-looking woman. She set the meeting up mostly by herself. I offered her my help. In the meeting, we read from our 12 and 12 book and shared our experiences, strength, and hope. It seemed like the meeting ran off topic more than it followed the material. Most of the 11 other AA members there were recently out of jail. Some had already been to AA and slipped. The other AA meetings I attended there were a cross-section of different drunks and druggies. There was a mixture of newcomers and old-timers, too. I had 3 years in AA, in the middle of the herd. I told my sponsor that I felt weird there. I wasn't sure why, but I didn't want to return. Besides, there were lots of other AA meetings in town, and many were closer to home. This one was out of the way. My sponsor suggested, his polite way of telling me to do something, that I go back to at least one more meeting to determine what was weird about it. I did go the following week, and I showed up a half hour early as usual, only to find that a house rule for the meeting was that no one could go inside until 10 minutes before the meeting was due to start. Sitting in the parlor waiting, I saw a sign on the wall that read, "You are not in the world to change things, you are in the world to be changed." I look around and found out the only old timer there was our secretary. She had been sober 7 years. Most of the other 11 people had fewer than 3 months. What kind of experience, strength, and hope would I get from these newcomers? That's what I was thinking. But then I had a more important thought. With my 3 years, what was I doing to help them? That's when it hit me. Maybe my higher power wants me to be present. Perhaps I'm supposed to sit down and listen, be there for others. So that's what I did. This may have been my first conscious image of myself as a kind of elder statesman. Since that day, I've been learning more about the art of listening. I'm trying to earn my black belt in hearing what others are trying to say. I'm trying to leave the middleman who lives between my ears out of the picture. Maybe that's how it works for me. Who knows? Perhaps that's how the world changes. You think? Signed, DRG in Islington, California. And now the gift of gratitude. A sober mom shares how beautifully AA transformed her drunken life into one full of purpose and joy. My daughter called me one day to ask the age-old question, "Is this all there is?" She was 28 years old and married to her handsome prince. She and her husband were both working in great jobs, living in Los Angeles in a funky bungalow with their two dogs. To all appearances, they were living the dream. I get up in the morning, work all day, make dinner, watch TV, go to bed, and do it all again the next day, she said. Is this what the rest of my life is going to be like? I wanted to laugh and say for the next 30 years or so, yes. My daughter had done everything right, got her degree, got married, got the good job, but somehow now that she was there, it just wasn't what she thought it was going to be. I thought about how similar my life in sobriety has been to her life. When I was a newcomer in AA, I couldn't wait to get that 30-day chip. Then I wondered how I would ever make it to 90 days. Picking up that chip seemed like a huge achievement, and then came chips at 6 months and 9 months, and I was dreaming the whole time of my bronze 1-year medallion. Now that would be an achievement, I told myself. But once I held each of those chips in my hand, I realized that my life was not really where I thought it should be. My marriage was hanging by a thread. My finances were a disaster. I was spread so thin you could see through me. I was trying to work full-time, go back to school, going to AA meetings every day, trying to be a good wife and reconnect with family. It all seemed like such a struggle. Even a year into the program, after doing everything I was supposed to do, staying sober, getting a sponsor, and working the steps, shouldn't my life have been transformed? It seems like this happened again and again, at 5 years, at 10 years, at 20 years. Upon reaching each of these milestone anniversaries, I remember thinking, now they'll listen to me, and now I'll be sought after speaker. Until now, I have only had a herd of sponsees quoting my wisdom. And yet, once someone handed me that medallion, my life was not transformed. I was still driving across town to get to the AA meeting early to make coffee and open the doors, set up the laptop because no one else seemed to be willing to help out. I was still doing the 16-week step study workshops every year, which usually started with 20 women, and lucky if five made it through to step 12. Sponsees I'd invested so much time and effort into either drifted away or drank. I wanted to yell to my higher power, "Is this all there is?" But what I secretly wanted to yell was, "What's in it for me? Where's my reward?" Sometimes I can be so blind. I imagine my higher power bopping her forehead in frustration and saying, "After all I've done for her?" When I arrived in AA, I was working for a minimum wage pay as a receptionist, expecting my husband to ask for a divorce any day. Deeply in debt, isolated and alone, with alcohol as my consoling companion, I was on the brink of disaster, and by simply crossing the threshold of an AA meeting, my life was transformed. In AA, I found a new meaning to life. I found a God of my understanding, the universe that previously had seemed to have it out for me, suddenly began showering me with random gifts and miracles that only I could see. So the next time my daughter asks me, "Is this all there is?" I can tell her that, at least from my own perspective, this life I've lived is a great and wonderful gift from the universe. Every dinner I get to meet, every time I get to walk the dog, every meeting I get to attend, these are all part of the continuing stream of love that's been graced to me by God. Signed, Deanna S. in Roswell, Georgia. And that's all the time we have today for the AA Grapevine. You've been listening to the November 2024 edition. This was part 3. Thank you for listening. My name is Shelley Miller, and I've been your volunteer reader. Stay tuned for more great programming on Sun Sounds.